GNC 593. It's Tuesday, July 13th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. For those watching the video, look up at the screen now. I got something special for you. For the rest of you, strap in. Here it comes.
All right, people, I need a go-no-go for the Geek News Central podcast. Digital archive recorders.
We're go fly.
Microphone.
We're go fly.
Video feed.
Go.
Web browser.
Go.
RSS data stream aggregator.
Go fly.
Interflux Todism suppressor.
All right, I'm confused.
Host readiness check.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
The Geek News Central podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are ready to go. Cue Todd in...
Five.
Button, who's got the button?
Four.
There is no cause for alarm.
Three.
Everybody hold on to something.
Two.
Just press the button.
One.
It's showtime.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from the beautiful state of Hawaii via the Geek News Central studio overlooking Greater Oahu. Hey everyone, welcome to the show. My name is Todd Cochran, and of course, for those of you who are on the video stream, you got to see the new video intro tonight. I hope you enjoyed that. And of course, we want to thank Ryan for all of his hard work, and he's going to be put into the Geek News Central Insider Club. Welcome to the club there, Ryan. Very cool stuff. If you didn't check it out, you'll want to watch the very first part of the video. Some of you watched it on YouTube already. But we want to thank him for that. Hey, I want to give a warm welcome to the Ohana, those of you that are longtime listeners of the show. Hey, thanks for being here. Thanks for being part of the family. And, of course, thanks for staying subscribed. Those of you who are new to the show, I want to welcome listeners from 165 countries worldwide. And I tell you, the show continues to grow. We've seen throughout the summer months, numbers staying pretty steady with the, you typically expect June, July, August for the numbers to take a nosedive, and they haven't. So I'm really excited that the numbers are staying there as we're on our march here to show number 600. So we're, we're not that far away, all things considering. We've got another month here before we'll hit show number 600. And I guess that's the important part. I tell you, one thing I do want to make a comment on. Actually, I think in the beginning of the show, I said it was show number 593. It's actually show number 592. So I don't know how my numbering got screwed up here at the beginning. But hey, we've had some feedback on the newsletter. Those of you on Blackberries, you can't read you can't get the hyperlinks. We've had problems with the images two times in a row on the right-hand border. So tonight I'm going back to the old system for a few times until I get these issues worked out. So the newsletter is going to be coming the old way tonight. So I apologize about it's just one of these things. It was a continual work in progress, and it just two times in a row people had issues, and I don't need that happening. So we'll get the newsletter squared away and re-engage that when I've got a template there that works better. So one thing to do, make sure you get signed up, okay? Get signed up for the newsletter so that way you don't miss an episode ever and you don't miss what I talk about during the show, because the show notes that are sent in the newsletter contain everything I'm going to talk about in the show tonight. And, of course, if you're watching us on the – what's going on here? There it is. If you're watching us on the Roku – of course, thanks for watching. Of course, you can come over to geeknewscentral.com anytime and check out all the great content over there. Of course, if you're watching on the Boxy, we welcome you as well. The numbers on the Roku continue to steadily climb, and I'm very happy with that. Never imagined that we would get the impact that we have so far by those of you watching on the Roku, but welcome to the show. I actually got an email from one of the Roku watchers, and he wants me to go into what's next for the Roku, and I'll kind of give some hints, but we are going to be updating the channel, and I'll talk just a little bit about that here in a second. Hey, several of you have had trouble using the ComSale promo code with GoDaddy for renewals, and I sent an email off to my contact at GoDaddy today and said, hey, what's going on? And he said, yep, but the price changed, something's happened. So what's going to happen is the ComSale code right now is being reassigned. It's still mine, but in a few days, I'll let you know when the ComSale code's good for renewals. So if you've got domain renewals, hang on for a few days here. We'll save you some money, because instead of the $749 introductory price, in which you can get, or $767 introductory price, which you can get most domains on. We're going to be able to get your renewals. I think it's $799. Okay. So that's better than paying the full retail on a renewal, which is, I think, $11 or something like that. So, hey, make sure you just stand by. We'll get that for you. Of course, if you're looking for servers, you're looking for hosting accounts, you're looking for a place to pick up some domains. Matter of fact, I picked up 7 domains in some domain auctions over the past week, some really good ones. So if you've got a topic or topicality that you wanted thinking about starting a website someday with, you've got an idea, make sure you watch the domain auctions. Now, my codes don't work in the domain auctions, but it's a great place to pick up domains that are being have expired and people haven't renewed, or some that have people for sale. So always, you know, I do a cursory look in there every couple days for certain domain names, and I collect a lot of podcast-specific domains. So got these things cheap, and I'm real happy with them. You'll see some of them going into effect because I've got some pre-built sites that I want to link up to that. But again, you know, domain names, servers, virtual hosting accounts, whatever it may be, when you get to the checkout counter, don't forget your geek here at Geek News Central. And you can go to geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy and get a list of all my codes. Todd will save you 10% on non-domain orders. Geek 5 will save you 15% on orders $20 or more. That com sale will work soon again for renewals, but you can still get discounts on .coms for new purchases. And of course, you'll want to use that Todd 20 code if you want 20% off on a 1-year. This is for shared hosting accounts. And of course, thanks for GoDaddy for being a longtime sponsor here at the show. Hey, many of you should have gotten your swag packages already. They all have been in the mail for some time now. If you have started to receive those, I would love to hear back from you on what you liked about your swag package, or if you think it was junk, let me know one way or the other. As I indicated on my blog yesterday at geeknewscentral.com, the new TriCaster has been ordered. The TCXD850 is on order. And in part, I was able to do that because the TriCaster studio that's running here in the studio right now is going to go to a new home, and it's going to stay in the Tech Podcast Network family. One of the members at TPN has agreed to purchase the studio. So what we've really done here is I've been able to keep the current device until my 850 shows up, to the TCXD 850 shows up. Then once I get everything set up, I'll send the device to the new owner, and we'll review at the time when he's ready to review who it is that he's got this unit. So I'm pretty excited about that because it's going to allow that particular individual to really take his show to a new level where he's not at right now. But I'm really excited about what the 850 is going to bring to the show in itself. Some of you saw me probably playing around with some dual screen stuff over the weekend, maybe if you're watching when the stream was coming up. But I'm really excited about where we're going to be able to go with the show. It just gives me a significant number of new options. But with that, I want to make some planning starting right now on basically logos and lower thirds and all this placement stuff that really kind of needs to get cleaned up in preparation for that new device. So don't know when I'm actually going to get it because I ordered pretty close to the launch date. The launch date of the device is this coming week. Actually, it's on Thursday. So there's pre-orders ahead of me. So it could be as much as a month before the new unit gets here. But they whacked 2 credit cards. I couldn't do it on 1. I had to do it on 2. And it's on order, so I'm pretty happy with that. And so that'll be forthcoming. So anyway, that's what's going on there. We're going to start focusing on the upcoming show 600. So we'll be doing a lot of stuff talking about where we're going to go after show 600. Nothing's going to change. Don't worry, though. I'm still going to be here twice a week, as I always am. But starting ready to implement some new things, and I'm pretty excited about that. And of course, keep your ideas coming on what I should change at show 600. You can do that at geeknews@gmail.com or the voice. Call into the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. Make sure you put in the subject line 600 so that I know it's for show 600. Okay, I want to, this week, looking at time here, this week my team has been, or actually today And last week, they were interviewing candidates for a position we have over at Raw Voice. And they've been going through, they have it all set up, doing the full, each candidate basically gets the same exact questions. I come in at the end of the interview and do about 15 minutes of discussion and questions with the interview candidates. And while I can't really go into specifics about specific individuals, parents or any of you looking for a new job, please, please take some time and buy a book on interviews. And just some basic stuff. I mean, you've spent time in college getting a degree. You've spent time prepping yourself with a great resume and then coming in and ultimately just blowing it during an interview. That's where you really are there to sell yourself and sell the sizzle of what you're going to be able to bring to a company. We're a new media company, and all of our new media, all of our folks that work at Raw Voice create content. And bar none of the candidates, not a one of them, had looked at any of the shows, had watched any of the shows, or listened to any of the shows. And it just astounded me that they went and do a little bit of research on background of, okay, what are these guys doing? Let's look at each of the individuals. And, when you're getting ready to go for an interview for a company, you better do your homework and be prepared to, basically say, yeah, I saw you on Twitter. I saw that, I listened to your last show. I thought this was interesting. Just making a comment to say, hey, I'm paying attention and I cared enough to spend 15 minutes checking you guys out. And do some mock interviews with friends, people that you know, people that you trust that can give honest feedback. If you're a techie, you better be ready to tell me what you're doing in the tech space or what you're watching in the tech space and what do you think is cool. I was really kind of astounded, to be honest with you, in some of the responses I got from some of the candidates. I don't want to go into anything real too specific, but it's, do your homework out there. Take the time to, study up on companies. And, I can't say that they didn't, but there was some things I was just like, wow, I would have known that if that was me. If I'd have been asked that question, I would have been able to say, yeah, boom, I'd have come up with the answer. And instead of I don't know. That's the worst thing, I don't know. That's the worst thing you can say during an interview. But that's one thing I have to say. When I got ready to retire from the Navy, they spent a whole, it was about 2 weeks of transition classes, and you basically are, given the basics of what to do during an interview. And, it doesn't take a lot of work to have a successful interview for a job. I don't think older folks make these mistakes. But boy, oh boy, I was just really kind of surprised, to be honest with you. It's tough out there. You don't sell yourself during the interview, you're not getting the job. You're just not. It's not going to happen. So I've talked about that enough, but I just wanted parents, take your college graduates, get them some, get them ready for job interviews. Don't let them fall on their face when it comes, important time to get a paycheck, get out of your house, and earn a living. So anyway, enough on that. Okay, let me go ahead here and take a look at my list here. Hey, if you have bought something from the swag store from cafepress.com/Ohana store, make sure you send me a picture of you with something from the swag store. Maybe I'll have something a little special for you, a bonus gift, okay? As well, we're still looking for folks to help me pay the rest of that, at least contribute a little bit to the TCDX 850 if you're willing to invest in the show along with me. Feel free to donate. It would be most graciously appreciated at geeknewscentral.com/insider. So got some offers on the offers page at geeknewscentral.com/offers. But if you're on Twitter and you want to connect with the Ohana, use hashtag Ohana or pound GNC. I know sometimes we get intermixed with General Nutrition, that company, but so far good. All right. Last but not least, of course, you guys know that anytime I can avoid getting an airplane to attend a meeting, I do. And that doesn't happen. A lot of times I have to go. And maybe it's a training seminar I'm doing, or, have to be there face to face. But really, when you can avoid getting in the car, getting in an airplane to go someplace, you can save a lot of money by using GoToMeeting. It's easy and affordable, and you can hold meetings online anytime, really anywhere you have an internet connection. You know, instead of wasting time sitting in airports or traffic jams, you know, GoToMeeting has become my indispensable tool. I use it on a daily basis. And matter of fact, people know me so well right now, we'll get into a conversation. Well, why don't we get up in a GoToMeeting session? Oh, yeah, yeah. So we'll launch up and actually get it in reverse. People just kind of say, hey, why don't we just look at this and GoToMeeting instead of, you know, trying to describe it over the phone. So, you know, GoToMeeting is brought to you by Citrix. It's the easiest and most secure way to hold an online meeting. You know, you can have a meeting up and running in seconds, literally. And for just $49 a month, you can hold as many meetings as you want. And it even includes phone and voice over IP conferencing free. So that's something you can actually use when you're not actually using the service. You can use their phone conferencing part. So as a listener of this show, you can go to meeting free for 30 days for this special offer. Visit gotomeeting.com/tech podcast. That's gotomeeting.com/tech podcast. Okay. Thanks, folks, for being, thanks, GoToMeeting, for being a sponsor here. And let's go ahead and bounce into the regular content tonight that I've got stacked up for you. And let me load this browser window, click over here and make sure that I'm good. One thing I want to, actually, why did that go away? One thing I talk about here initially is talking about Facebook. Facebook has introduced a panic button app. Today they announced that they're going to allow this so-called panic button application on their website. The app is aimed at young people and teens who need to report instances of unwanted sexual advances, cyberbullying, and threats of any type. Cases of abuse is going to be, now this is kind of interesting here. This was actually requested by the UK government, I guess, where they're actually, this information will be reported if you're on a UK site to the UK Child Exploitation and Online Protection Center called CEOP. So I thought this was kind of interesting that they actually have done this. Now, it's not real clear here if Facebook has done this for US users as well. They say it's been introduced, this panic button app, but they haven't really said whether or not it's actually going to be in the United States as well. But I'll keep an eye out for that and see if I can get some clarification. But what's your thoughts on this panic button app? Are the teens going to use it? Makes you question, doesn't it? Okay, let's go ahead and move on here. Microsoft is reporting that 74% of workplace PCs still use Windows XP. That's a lot. VP of Windows, Tammy Reller, admitted today at the Windows Partner Conference that nearly three quarters or 74% of businesses' PCs are still using Windows XP. And that's a big number. You know, I'm sure Microsoft wished the number was a lot lower there, but, that is not the case. So, we'll have to see how this develops. You know, every time I'm pushing, let me try. What's going on here? For those of you, I'm not even going to. First off, forget it. I won't just. Yeah, I've already started. Because the rest of your audio audience are going, what in the heck is he talking about? There's a little overlay that comes up on my video screen. And every time I've been hitting switch the video view, it's been like disappearing. So I'm sitting here looking around like I've hit that three times to keep it up. I have no idea why it keeps going away. Today was a big stink over a Consumer Report article, and they have basically said that that they're not going to recommend the iPhone 4 because it has it's got an issue with reception. It is not how should we say it? It's not exactly what Apple. It's what they have found is not exactly what Apple has reported. And Apple has even went so far that they have on their Apple forums, or actually in the forum system, they have been killing discussion threads about the Consumer Report article. So if you're looking for the messages on the support forums about this, they're gone, and they've removed as many as six discussion threads about the Consumer Report. So obviously, Apple is a little bit sensitive about what has come out there. But Consumer Reports goes pretty deep into what the issue and what they found in basically doing tests in a chamber to basically detect how much signal loss that the phone is really seeing. And they're basically saying, hey, this thing has got a flaw. It's got a manufacturing defect. I think that's the words they used. But I have a link up to both that, to the article here on Apple killing discussion threads in their support forums, and also the report from Consumer Reports. And this was big news. It was right on the New York Times website. It was on Consumer Reports. It was picked up by everybody today. So the question really is here, is Apple going to make good on this? Or are they going to, is it just too much money? You know, it's probably billions of dollars that they've got wrapped up in this launch. So, do you think Apple's going to make good on this, or is people just going to have to live with their flawed iPhone 4s? I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. Love to hear you guys' feedback on this as well. Hey, over on Engadget, and actually I'd gotten a press release on this from these folks, and I had kind of ignored it. It was from the folks over at Pan Digital. Pan Digital has introduced what they're calling the personal photo scanner. And what this does is it cuts cables and it simply writes to a memory card. So when you can scan a photo up to 8.5 by 11, and they write the scan straight to a memory card at 600 DPI, which is pretty good. And then once you basically get a few scans in it, you pull the memory stick out and put it in your PC. And to just upload the pictures and do any cropping or anything else that you want. $149.99 is the price on this. Looking forward to seeing some actual hardcore reviews on the actual device and seeing how well it worked. Because, you know, I've used a number of these little mini scanners, and some work better than others. This one's a little bigger, so we'll see. But big announcement there by Pan Digital. And they've been trying real hard lately here. They've been in the news quite a bit over the last couple of weeks with new product announcements. For those of you that are Android users and love the Android platform, got good news for you. Today, Google introduced the App Inventor for Android. And this has been in work for about a year here. And what you can do now is on the website, appinventor.googlelabs.com, you can apply to get an account here. You have to put your Gmail name in a form. And I don't know how long it's going to take for you to get an invite, but you can build just about any app that you can imagine with the App Inventor. Now, what they've been doing over the last year with this program is they've been allowing students, educators, a variety of different folks to really use this development tool in lieu of having to know code. And I think this is really going to be a game changer for the folks at Android. And now it may end up, we may get 50,000 junk apps, but probably no less than what's already in the Apple iPhone store, or iTunes and for the App Store. But now, if all you really need is to get a acceptance into this, and you can build your own app for Android. Now, I think the thing that's cool about this is, again, you don't need to be a developer. It requires no programming knowledge. And what they really did here is you virtually design your Android app, and you hook your phone to it, and you can test right on your actual phone itself. So it's really smart. It really, really is. We'll see. We'll see how big this takes off, and what it really is going to end up being utilization-wise. I'm kind of excited to check it out. Now, the question I've got is, that means I'm going to have to go out and pick up an Android phone to do development work on for my own stuff, because I don't have one. Maybe I'll have to think about an upgrade for the kids' phone, I think. that might be a way home here. Over on Geek News Central, Alan, one of our contributing authors over there, he wrote an article, "Will the NFL Join the Media Revolution?" And he basically goes in, and of course, I don't watch too much sports, so I don't follow what's going on with the online world and access to sports. But in his article, he says the NFL is the last major U.S. sport holding out. Major League Baseball, NHL, and NBA all have deals in place to bring whatever game you want live on your PC. Now, I know that NFL has an HD site accessible by most people in the United States. I don't know outside the United States, but he says, to his knowledge, the only option is basically a $300 NFL Sunday ticket. And even though you may not be interested in the other 14 games going on, too bad, you have to pay $300 for the whole deal. So he's hoping that the NFL will make some sort of subscription service available to those in the United States and overseas where they can watch on a per game basis on the game that they may want to watch. So he does say that overseas, they will sell you a radio, in other words, Internet Explorer audio only, basically you can get audio of the game, but that's it. So he says, will they change this coming season? Now, any of you that are NFL fans, I'd love to hear you guys' thoughts, and what do you guys experience so far with NFL football games online? Did Alan miss anything here, or do you agree with him that they need to make a change and get with the game here? So only time will tell. Hey, question of the day for all of you guys. What is your most essential app? Doesn't mean if it's Android, BlackBerry, or iPhone. What is your most essential app? What is the app you use the most? What is the one that if it was removed off your phone, you would just be lost without it? Love to hear your feedback on that. Geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline is 619-342-7365. Over on Wired, actually, this is Gizmodo. Over on Gizmodo, they have an article here talking about terahertz detectors. Now, in the RF world, most thing is in gigahertz, but when you get up into the tegahertz, or radars run in a variety of frequencies, but not necessarily in the terahertz range. But what they're coming up with, and really what that is almost really true, not even at the radar range, it's almost laser or light. But what they've been designing is a detector, a terahertz detector, that could see through your clothes from a mile away. Now, if you think about this for a second, and maybe the reason why they need this technology is, imagine all these guys that are, sitting on guard shacks over in either Iraq or Afghanistan. They've got all these folks that are walking up to the buildings and blowing themselves up. So while this is just now, in its very infancy here, what's pretty cool is that the researchers have tested hundreds of different substances and created a library of terahertz spectra to compare to the signal from the target and instantly identify the material that was hit. So as they can, they can send the signal out, then the detector will detect exactly what it's impacted. Now, this is huge because I'm sure Homeland Security, I'm sure that the DOD is going to really be going crazy after this. This, whoever developed this, let's see if I can find who it was that actually put it together. It was at the Polytechnics Institute, wherever that is. And this was a study that was published in the Nature Photonics magazine. But stand by. Money will be coming their way, I am sure. But they said they could detect signals from 67 feet away, the length of their laboratory space. Theoretically, they could identify materials hundreds of feet or even miles away. That's pretty crazy stuff. So, again, where does that fall in the spectrum? It's really right there at the laser frequency range. It's pretty amazing. It really, really is. To think about being able to actually build a detector, because it takes a lot of, either they have to overcome power, put too much power to it to be able to detect it, or come up with some technologies to read it. But they've come up with some cool way to actually see the response of the return on the signal that's been emitted. So pretty cool stuff. Anyway, it's just geeky. I'm sorry. Went too far. All right, AT&T has said that, this is funny. This is over on GigaOM. AT&T does not want mobile data usage to grow as long as, AT&T does I'm batting 1,000 here. AT&T does want mobile data usage to grow, and then parentheses, as long as it gets its take. Now, there's an interesting write-up here by Liz Gaines over on GigaOM. And, you know, with the increase of their bandwidth charges to approximately $75 per gigabyte is what they're, well, not at $50 per gigabyte, I guess, is what they're charging now for some data plans. You know, they are wanting their cake and eating it too. The folks at AT&T are saying that they're going to move heaven and earth to get out in front of this demand. He says the number of folks using Wi-Fi connections in the first week of 2010 were the same number as all of 2008. Now, this was AT&T Wi-Fi connections. And today, 51% of AT&T's postpaid subscribers have devices that handle both voice and data, with an additional 5.8 million non-voice-centric data devices. So he goes on to say, so there's basically a huge demand for data delivered to mobile devices, which shortens the distance between intention and action. He says by 2014, total traffic as compared to 2008 is simply a rounding error to zero. And that's how fast the demand for bandwidth is going to increase through 2013. They go on to say that by 2013, 90% of the web traffic is going to be video. And, of course, I think we all know the video wave is going to be even bigger with Google TV and other devices like that or other applications like that. So the question is, they're going to build, as they say, they're going to move heaven and earth to get out in front of this demand, yet they have went to a model where you have to pay to use this connectivity. And we talked about this in an earlier show when they went from unlimited on the iPhone to 2 gigs. They basically have, what they have said here is that we know this big wave of data utilization is coming. We had to make the price change now or get killed later. And I said in this show that the reason this was so bad is that in a couple of years, we're going to be using our mobile phones a lot more than we are now, and we're going to ultimately, if other companies follow suit of AT&T, paying one heck of a lot more money for our access. Now, I just hope that Wi-Fi connections continue to grow in mass, but we all know, you know, how many places you go to today where there's actually a free open Wi-Fi connection, where you don't actually have to pay for it, or you have to get some sort of coupon or something like that from the store owner, or the code. You have to go ask for the code. It's just not easy to get on a Wi-Fi network anymore. I don't care where you're at. At least here in Honolulu, places I go to, I look for Wi-Fi signals all the time, and I just don't see them. But they want the data usage to grow as long as they get their money from all of us. Pretty cool initiative going on by a group of folks. This is a new initiative that's going to be using software to allow users of Twitter and Flickr send secret messages. Now, we know that there's been many issues for folks that have been in China, North Korea, and other repressive countries where they've tried to get messages out about things going on, and the government has really cracked down upon it. And, you know, if you're traced back to it being you, you end up in jail or dead, one of the two. But the new program is called Collage, and it's related to a research paper at the USENIX Security Conference. It's actually going to be introduced at the USENIX Security Conference next month. And quote from that particular research says, oppressive regimes and even democratic governments restrict internet access. Existing anti-censorship systems often require users to connect through proxies, but these systems are relatively easy for a censor to discover and block. This project offers a possible next step in the censorship arms race. Rather than relying on a single system or set of proxies to circumvent censorship firewalls, they're going to explore whether the vast deployment of sites that host user-generated content can breach the firewalls. Now, I don't see if it actually says who the group is that is doing this. It's basically saying researchers. Oh, researchers at Georgia Tech. That's who it's. That's the folks that developed the software. So that's pretty cool. So the folks at Georgia Tech have created this program known as Collage, and it's going to be introduced next month. Wasn't that how those spies were getting trying to get information out? They were embedding text and stuff and messages and using a lot of open source tools that are available to do just that. So we'll see how this develops, but a way to get, and they've got this big decoupage of how the actual information gets in and out to the groups that they're trying to communicate with from censored countries and so forth. So pretty cool stuff. And I'll have a link up the show notes for you on this as well. A little bit of a report card on the VC industry. In 2005, there were 243 venture capital funds with 29 billion dollars in venture capital. First quarter of 2010, there are now 38 funds, or with 3,739 in millions available. I guess that would be $3,739 million available dollars to invest in companies. So this is amazing. Going from 2005, where there was $29 billion available in venture capital fund, or venture capital, now in first quarter of 2010, actually second quarter of 2010, there's only $1.9 billion. That's pretty scary stuff here, that there is that little of money in circulation right now for investments in startups. So I'll have the link up to this in the show notes. You can check it out, the full details. And then part of it has to do, too, with the upcoming changes in tax laws. And the venture capitalists really have no incentive at this point, tax incentive, to be investing a lot of money in startups, unless they, you know, there's still some incentives for companies that make the payoff. But Uncle Sam is reaching so far and so deep into these investors' pockets and taking tax out that most of these investors are putting their money other places. All right, Windows 7 Service Pack 1 public beta has been released today. So if you're a Windows 7 user and you want to be a guinea pig, you can go download the Windows beta. And this is over on neowin.net is where this is. I got links to it as well. So Service Pack 1 is available as a beta. And that means that if it's doing a public beta, that the actual update will be available pretty shortly. It's usually less than a month before the service pack is generally released, after they come out of a beta release like this. So anyway, if you've got an issue that can't wait, go ahead and update the service pack one. Hey, we talked about Fring a little bit on the last show. Fring has got a major battle going on with Skype. And basically Fring is saying Skype is blocking us, and Skype is saying, no, we didn't block Fring. Fring was the iPhone app that allowed you to do video over 3G, basically video calls over 3G. And so there's a little bit of a text war, basically blog post war, going on right now between Fring and Skype. Skype's not happy. It says, Fring's misuse of Skype software was damaging to our brand and reputation. I know, it takes a lot to damage Skype's brand and reputation. You know, a lot of people use Skype on a daily basis. You know, Fring is unknown to me. Skype is known to me. Who would I trust more from a utilization standpoint? Obviously Skype, but Fring has definitely had an issue here trying to work with the folks at Skype, and it has ended badly. So we'll see if any lawsuits develop out of this one. Well, I don't know if we talked about this in an earlier show or not. We may have, but an article got picked up by the Register that I kind of have to laugh about. Of course, we know that this new dome is being put on the oil leak. Matter of fact, I think I saw a video of it today where it's actually on. But there's a researcher that is saying that within the next 6 months, the world may come to an end. And, of course, those of you in the UK are not going to like this. He's blaming the Brits. It says, ominous reports are leaking past the BP Gulf Savage Operation news blackout that the disaster unfolding in the Gulf of Mexico may be about to reach biblical proportions, writes prolific poster Terrence Aim, the self-styled knowledge of cooperative helium, okay, whatever that is. He says, this world-killing event will be the result of a methane megabubble that will soon arise from the seabed and cause a massive life-as-we-know-it-ending series of explosions, tsunamis, poisonous storms, and other unpleasantries. Okay. He says, there's warnings here of such great magnitude because there is a rift in the seaboard. How does he know that? He says, why is there a $50,000 fine for a reporter coming to the scene of the spill? Did you know that? I didn't know that. Did you know there was a fine that reporters would have to pay if they went to the epicenter of the operations? He asked, why is the press being kept away? He said, word is that the disaster is escalating. You know, it's people like this that I waste 2 minutes of time on in the show. Oh, but it is kind of scary. You know, that much oil coming out. There's got to be something empty down there, isn't there? Hey, the European Space Agency's Rosetta spacecraft has flew past the asteroid Letita on Saturday. It's the largest asteroid to date to be visited by a spacecraft. The spacecraft made its closest approach to the asteroid at a distance of 3,162 kilometers. And didn't we land a spacecraft? Didn't the Japanese land on an asteroid? I guess this was because it this was the largest one, I guess. Anyway, so scientists believe the asteroid is a metal-rich body, although previous ground-based observations revealed characters similar to a, whatever this is, C-type primitive body. And the flyby is the latest milestone for the mission launched in 2004, whose ultimate destination is the comet. Oh, boy. Churyumov Gerasimenko, and obviously a Russian name. Rosetta will rendezvous with the comet in late 2014 and deploy spacecraft to land on the comet's nucleus. So more exciting things to come by the Rosetta spacecraft. Hey, over on Ars Technica, they've got a great article here. Now, you guys know that in North Carolina, there was a huge battle going on about municipal broadband. And we know that the cable companies have been very aggressive in making their folks that they have paid, I guess for a better word, paid off or had made contributions to their campaigns. Anyway, several senators, several North Carolina state senators have had their bill defeated. And North Carolina Senator David Hoyle, his amendment that would basically shut down municipal broadband in North Carolina. So this is good news for those of us that think that the municipal broadband folks are on the right track. So I'm sure this is not the first attempt to get this shut down, and I'm sure they'll come back after it again. But it's good to know that this municipal program, at least in North Carolina, is going to continue. But win for the people on this one, that's for sure. Citizen journalism is not making up a loss for local newspapers. And this was according to the folks from the Newspaper Research Journal. Issue number 2 in volume 31. Okay, so the Newspaper Research Journal has written an article saying that citizen journalism not making up for a loss of local newspapers. What they did is they visited a random assortment of 45 cities and looked at sites that talked about news within those cities and basically, you know, culled articles from each of the sites and really basically said that the level of reporting on those sites about those cities was not up to par of what would be normally reported upon in a from a regular newspaper. So I think we all know that many newspapers have cut staff. They've done it here in Honolulu, the new Star Advertiser. I think they got rid of all their older reporters and probably kept the ones that didn't cost them as much on staff. People here are complaining about the quality of the new newspaper. I think it's fine. We get it. And my wife primarily reads it. I read certain sections on the weekends just for local Honolulu news. But it's definitely typically old content based upon what I get on the internet. So what is your guys' thoughts? What are you guys seeing in new sites that you're basically reading online in your local cities? Are you guys seeing, you know, the level of news reporting, or do you agree that this is the issue, that there's not good reporting on local websites in your hometowns as compared to what you may have gotten with a newspaper just a few years ago? I don't know. Here in Honolulu, we've got some initiatives going on. There's a lot of sources here for news that I don't think is a lot of this. I think there's two websites that focus on local news only, and they do a pretty good job covering stuff, that's for sure. You know that universal fee that you pay, the universal service fund fee that you pay every month on your phone bill? There's a great article here on Ars talking about how one rural telco who only serves 17 people. Yes, it's a telephone company that has 17 residential customers, and they received $300,000 of the Universal Service Fund. Now, if that doesn't make you mad, check this out. We know that AT&T was insanely profitable in 2009. They earned $34.4 billion. That's how much they grossed last year in profit. Excuse me. They had $34.4 billion in revenue and $12.5 billion in net income, okay? The company was given $435 million from the U.S. government for the Universal Service Fund. Now, investors received $9.7 billion in cash as dividends of the $12.5 billion earned. So the question is, why did the United States give $345 million to AT&T for the Universal Service Fund? Well, it's because of their market share. Now, last year, they collected $7.2 billion from phone companies through these charges. It's basically a 14% tax on your phone service. And if you go through the list of recipients of this money, there are some phone companies that are receiving as much as $17,000 per line. So I think, you know, I still have a copper landline here, one left. You know, basically we use it for stuff I do with the show and stuff. But $17,000 per line because they're a very small company. Some other companies were earning $5,000 to $6,000 per line. This doesn't make any sense. Basically, what we're doing is we're supplementing very, very small areas. And I understand that everyone needs to have telephone service. But what about just putting up a cell tower? Couldn't the government have put up a cell tower and said, okay, AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, Clear, go ahead and put a cell up there. And then your cell lines up, or cell equipment up there. And then we're just going to give phones to all those 17 customers. Wouldn't that have been a lot cheaper than giving that company $300,000 a year? Let's see here, 17 AT&T bills. Let's just, you know, max them out, give them $129 plans. So, yeah, the math would be, I think it'd be cheaper. I don't know how much it costs to put up a tower, but it'd pay for itself in a couple of years. Oh, man, the irony. I think I'm going to open a phone company and service like 10 or 15 people here in the neighborhood. That'd be kind of cool, yeah. How many of you have downloaded the iPad app Uzu? E-U-Z-U. I saw a video on this. It's pretty cool. And I don't know what it cost. I don't know if it's free or not. But do a search for it, UZU. If you've got an iPad, I think you'll like this particular app. There's a lot of issues right now in the copyright space. And imagine this. Imagine that you have received a Omega watch over the holidays. It's, Omega watches are pretty nice. I think they normally start out $400 or $500 a piece. But let's say it's not something that you would wear all the time. And after, you know, basically kind of hang on to it for a few months, you decide to sell it on eBay. Thanks to a decision at the Ninth Circuit, that might not be so easy anymore. Or if the person that gave you the watch actually bought the watch from Costco, it may have been actually illegally sold by Costco. And what it is, it's the first sale rule that goes into effect on foreign goods covered by copyright. And You hear my doggy out there?
Max, stop.
And he basically, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals have said that the buyer or the seller, I mean the company that owns the copyright on the watch, Omega, has the right to be the basically say who can and cannot sell those watches even after you have bought it and trying to resell it. It's really kind of a bizarre thing here, and I'll have the link up to it in the show notes. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but libraries are scared to death about this new rule because they're basically saying, hey, if we get a book that's been printed in a foreign country, there's these basically all kinds of weird stuff about who they can buy from and if they can be sold. And I mean, it's beyond me. But anyway, you may not be able to sell stuff that you have bought because of foreign copyright. It's or legally sell. It's beyond me. How could that be possible? How could they say that you can't do it? But again, it's this first sale rule. Maybe there's a lawyer in the audience that can explain this thing and give us all some logic on this. But the Electronic Frontier Foundation has joined in, and it basically said the logic of this ruling is outrageous, and it's basically summed up to being a bogus copyright theory. And I guess some folks at Public Knowledge also responded, saying there's no textual support for this interpretation of the lawfully made under this title. Under this title usually isn't synonymous with in this country. So it goes on to say, as if this brief argues, if Congress had actually wanted the statute to apply to works made within the United States, why didn't it explicitly say so, as it has in thousands of other instances within the United States Code? And does this mean that now all a company has to do is manufacture its products abroad, stamp them with a copyrighted image logo that costs less than $50 to register, and the company can suddenly dictate the terms of redistribution? In other words, if you want to resell it long after the products are first sold. Again, this is Omega. Omega's taking this to court. They don't want people reselling watches. Or they don't want companies like Costco buying from a third party, bringing the watches into their stores and selling them. They want to be first point of sale. So it's all about control, price and demand, right? Anyway, link will be up in the show notes on this. Hey, over on CNET, man claims to own 84% of Facebook. Apparently, this individual's already in trouble for some other type of business he was in that scammed people out of apparently a couple hundred thousand dollars. But this individual from Wellsville, New York, claims in a lawsuit that he entered into a contract with Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg in 2003 designed to develop a website that would ultimately become the social networking giant. The contract entitled him to a $1,000 fee and a 50% stake in the final product, which eventually launched as the Facebook.com website, according to the suit, which was filed in the Supreme Court of New York on June 30th. So now here's the question. Can you imagine this, you know, talk about that guy from Apple that sold all of his shares for $800. Now imagine if this guy actually wins this lawsuit and really is entitled to 84% of Facebook. If you were a venture capitalist, would you be upset or what? And so anyway, we'll see how this one makes out. Stranger things have happened. You know, Facebook, there's all kinds of weird, you know, first of all, there's all the college students who came up with the idea and they either paid them off or however that all worked out. But there's all been kind of all these weird things about how Facebook originated. If you've got an idea, you better be very, very careful because if you promise something to someone and then, you know, you basically go on down the road without them, you could be in a lot of trouble. So I'll be curious to see how this works out. Hey, Information Week is reporting that that Apple ranks first in vulnerabilities. Now, this is by Sekina, S-E-C-U-N-I-A. Sekina's latest security report finds that investment in security by major vendors have not decreased vulnerabilities in their product. Goes on to say, the number of vulnerabilities affecting PC users in the first 6 months of the year reached 380, about 90% of the vulnerability total of all 2009. So if the trend continues, there will be 760 vulnerabilities by the end of the year, almost double 420 from 2009. Now, how does this tie into Apple? It says in the ranking of the 10 vendors with the most vulnerabilities in their products, Apple overtook Oracle during the first 6 months of the year. Oracle dropped to second place, followed by Microsoft, HP, Adobe, IBM, VMware, Cisco, Google, and Mozilla. Now, that doesn't mean that even though they have the most vulnerabilities, that those are being exploited or actually things are, you know, people are taking over machines and so forth, only that there was a high number of vulnerabilities detected and either work in progress, a fix in progress or something to that effect. So they're basically saying that the number of vulnerabilities detected was the most on Apple in the first 6 months of the year. Not that they've been exploited or anything, but of course they don't say that they haven't either. But kind of interesting that Oracle is second and followed by Microsoft. With a number of things coming out with Microsoft vulnerabilities, you would think Microsoft would be in the lead, but it doesn't appear to be the case. Hey, AT&T is giving away 3G microcells to some loyal customers. A number of you have reported that you've been contacted by AT&T offering a 3G microcell with no strings attached. And if you've gotten a letter like that over the weekend or if you actually received one in the mail, love to hear your feedback on that. You know what the microcell is being used for, right? Well, your phone connects to the microcell, and then it uses the internet to either move your data or connect your voice calls. You still pay for your minutes and data utilization, okay? It's not like you're free. You don't have free time when you're on this thing, okay? Be aware of that, all right? How many of you have gotten one of these in your home? How many of you are mad that you're paying, you know, continue to have to pay the, actually get billed on utilization, even though you're using your own internet connection to connect a cell phone that should connect to your house in the first place, right? There's a good article over on Slashdot talking about retrieving stolen laptops. And there's a guy over there that basically had a laptop stolen. And he had Thunderbird set up to do an IMAP into Gmail. He quickly closed the Gmail account, moved the mail around. But he was able to see after a week or so that whoever had stolen his laptop had loaded Thunderbird and tried to log into the Gmail account. Now, Gmail shows you the last few IPs that have connected to the account, and he went to the local police. He went to the FBI because it was the laptop was now across the state line, and no one wanted to help him. So it's kind of an interesting development here. This guy has got somebody dead to rights that they have his laptop, yet the police are saying, hey, we got bigger fish to fry, tough luck, buddy. You know, since when do we allow criminals to just get away with that kind of activity? Criminals have to be laughing. You know, they really do. They have to be saying, I'm never going to get caught. I stole this. You know, I'm going to use it. I'm not going to get caught. It's kind of unnerving, really. It really is. Hope he had good insurance. All right, The Guardian has made it super simple for blogs to repost his content. And I think this is kind of cool. It's an article over on Tech Dirt. But what's the angle that they have put upon this ability? Well, they give you a way to basically click on a button right in the article, and it'll connect to your blogging software if you have it available so you can blog externally with a third-party application. And the conditions are that you have to republish the full article in the exact format provided, including text, links, and images. And this is because The Guardian is also embedding ads with those syndicated stories. Now, assuming that the ads are not particularly intrusive and annoying, then I would think that a lot of blogs are going to find this, this is according to TechDirt, that many folks are going to find this to be perfectly reasonable. So, and I'm not a big fan of those in link, you know, basically in text ads. They drive me crazy. They really do, especially if you accidentally mouse over one. So if they have those pop-up ads, I wouldn't do it. But it is interesting that the Register is making this this push. Well, so everyone else seems to be going to paywalls. They're just trying to drive traffic. That's what they're trying to do. Hey, this is talking about the economy and everyone having to tighten their belt a little bit. Why are the RIAA bosses, why did they get raises? Well, it appears that the two masterminds behind the plan to sue fans, which ended in disaster, have gotten some significant pay raises. Apparently, one individual over there, his last name was Bainwall, in 2008 made over $2 million, an increase of $1.485 million he made in 2007. And then another individual made $1.332 million, more than $985,000 that he made the year earlier. So that's a pretty good pay raise, $985 to $1.332, and $1.485 million to over $2 million. Hey, how many of us can sign up for that kind of a pay raise, right? While the rest of us are tightening our belts and there's starving artists out there. Apparently, if you are an IRA, that's the job. Hey, let's go over. You work for the RIAA and cash in on these big paychecks these guys are getting. Amazing. It really, really is. They're collecting that money on those lawsuits and giving themselves bonuses for that. Okay, here's was the link about this library's worried about potential Supreme Court ruling on the legality of selling imported Omega watches. So I'll have this linked up in the show notes. This is over at TechDirt as well. Hey, finally, that was the final article of tonight, but I do have a voicemail and some emails to go into. So let me go ahead here and play the first voicemail. Hey, of course, you can always leave comments on the show at geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline is 619-342-7365. Here comes the voicemail.
Hey, Todd, this is Rob in Pittsburgh. In Friday's show, you were asking for feedback from anybody that has seen some iAds on their iPhone. And I actually went hunting for some and found a list of iPhone apps that were supposedly showing these ads. And none of them would show me the ads. I checked to make sure that I was running 4.0 in the settings general about the device, and I ended up going to looking for that Jason Ting's Flashlight app, but I guess it won't show up because I don't have an iPhone 4. But I found another one of his apps, and when I loaded it, I do see the iAd at the bottom of his screen. So I'm wondering if the reason he has such impressive numbers, and if anybody else that's thinks those are higher than they're getting on their apps that they think are serving up ads. It's possible that there's something there that's preventing the ads from showing up on all the devices that the developer might expect them to. Hope that wasn't too confusing. Thanks a lot. Bye.
No. Understand. I'm just curious though. If any, obviously you went hunting for ads. And you didn't have much luck finding them. What's everyone else seeing? Are you guys finding the iAds? And I've heard like they're these major productions. When you click on one, it opens up this fancy image and it does all kinds. I've heard all these stories, but no one has yet to have put like a video or something up of screen captures of what these things look like. So it just irks me. Of course, if it's a free app, I guess you can understand people would be, willing to put, if they're free, people are probably willing to have the ads be intrusive. But if you've paid for an app and the ads are still there, man, it would make me angry. I think that would be the most upsetting of all. But I guess only time will tell how this develops. Okay, that was the only voicemail tonight. Of course, if you want to call into the show, 619-342-7365. Let me go ahead and flip over here to the email. And I've seen a couple that may have come in before the make sure I've got the right date in here. Yep, got an email from DR, He says, hey, Todd, I'm a new viewer. Want to let you know I really enjoy your show. I was wondering if you could give an update about Roku and what's maybe in Roku's future. Also, could you go over how to get videos uploaded onto Blueberry? I tried, but without luck. I thought it would be like YouTube. As far as you receiving vile emails, remember, there's a lot of sad people out there. They just want to strike out at successful people. Keep up the great work, DR Hand. Hey, you know, basically what's going on with Roku is they've updated the app so that we can now really put live programming on there. There's ability now to actually send a live video stream into the Roku app. And that excites me a lot because if we're able to implement it, you not only will you be able to catch the show live when it's live, but then it'll revert to an archive type of stuff once the live portion is over. So we're excited about that. And so far as our Roku app, what we're going to be implementing next on all our different channels, on Tech Podcast, on Blueberry, and soon ProMed Network, you're going to be able to, not now, but here in the near future, you actually be able to subscribe to the shows that you want on their respective websites, and then they'll actually be in your MyCast list on the actual device itself. So you'll be able to control what you've subscribed to even through the Roku app. So that's what's coming next, is ability to control subscriptions, so that way you don't have to search for the media that you want to watch. And, you know, believe me, we love you guys surfing through and looking at the different content on the device. That's awesome, because basically it's like, you know, a little sampler pack. You can go through and check out four or five different shows in a hurry, and just using your remote control there and your Lazy Boy. But I think all these set-top boxes are really going to, you know, continue to grow the amount of content they have in them. It's just going to give you more choices where you don't have to watch stuff on the, basically on your regular TV channels provided by your cable provider. Now, so far as Blueberry goes, Blueberry is not at all like YouTube. The content creators over there that are listed on the site, now if you're hosting with us and you're actually paying for a hosting account, you upload your recorded media in either a MP4, M4V format. We've got some folks that are uploading stuff in AVI and .mov, but that's really not the format that's really consumed well on multiple devices. So if you're doing video, MP4, M4V is what the site will take, and .mp3 is, of course, for audio. Now, we do not convert our content that is up, or our content creators' content does not get converted into Flash. That's what YouTube does. If you want your video to be in a Flash and have an embed, you can put it over on Blip, or you can put it over on YouTube. That's what they specialize in. But what we specialize in is the downloadable content. What you see on the Roku device is actually the raw video file, the MP4 or the M4V file that is queued. You're not actually seeing a Flash video encode of the media. So really what happens there is generally Flash files are much smaller, so we're incurring a little bit of a hit on bandwidth, but the quality of the video is generally much better than what you would get on Flash. So again, what's being submitted to Blueberry for those that are hosting with us, M4V, MP4, and MP3, those that don't host it with us, we actually syndicate their content through RSS feeds. They've basically applied to be a member. They've entered their RSS feed, their show name, description, and so forth. And then every hour or so, we'll go out in there and touch their RSS feed to make sure that they have, see if they've updated the show. If they have, we update our database, and that's available as well. If they've filled out all their profile information, you'll be able to see their content on the Roku or Boxy or other devices that we're going to be launching, or actually channels we'll be launching here in the near future. So I hope that kind of clears it up. If it doesn't, email me back. I'd be more than happy to go in a little deeper. Got an email here from Chris. He said, hey, Todd, just thought I'd chime in regards to your article about the seemingly low bar set by the FCC to provide broadband to all homes at 4 meg. Though it doesn't seem like much, when you multiply that number by the number of homes that would need to be upgraded to achieve 4 meg download speeds, you're talking about a very large pipe back to central office. Oh, absolutely. Your average DSLAM would have to ride on a pipe greater than a DS3 connection to get 4 meg per house. If as you suggested, all homes should have 1 gig, absolutely, then that pipe would grow to closer to 10 gig or Sonnet connections on the back end. Within the central office, you would have to have an OC192 or greater. Fantastic. To provide enough bandwidth to all of your customers at least 1G per second speeds. Now remember, even on 1G per second networks throughout the entire United States, when you're on a Verizon system, it's generally pretty much shared. You're never going to achieve truly 1 gig per second on a 1 gig connection. But he says, I'm not certain if you priced an Accuring lease before, but it's crazy expensive. Believe me, I understand, but listen, this is where we got to go. You know, you put this stuff out in mass. We as a country have to move the bar forward. We are supposed to be the most technologically advanced country in the world. So what we should demand, a much higher broadband standard than 4 gig to all residents of the United States. I understand it's going to be expensive, but you know what? We got to move the bar forward. Ultimately, it's just bandwidth. It's fiber. It's a certain amount of equipment, infrastructure, but it's got to be the way we're going to have to move forward. I just can't see us not, you know, they're never going to agree to it. They'll never move to 1 gig standard. It'll be 25 years before they do that. But why set the bar so low at 4 gigs? You know, it's kind of crazy. He goes on to say, in your Firefox story, I've got a few articles here that may cause you to pause and rethink the idea of moving away from Firefox to Chrome or others. The first is a fresh news from a security researcher who stresses that hackers can craft a malicious extension and grab login and password info straight from your browser without your knowledge. The second is a video of a four-way HTML deathmatch where there are surprising results. The problem with Firefox is Firefox does not currently support H.264 HTML videos. In other words, .mp4, .m4v format. They want to go to the OGV format, which is horrible encodes. Last is a recent article that does several tests of all the latest browsers. While Firefox will not be winning any speed tests, it does very well, contrary to what many think, including some heavy hitters in the tech world. Hey, thanks for that. That was excellent, Chris. Thanks, and please feel free to write in again and basically blast me away on what my thoughts and comments, but that's what it's all about. Hey, I got an email from John. He said, hey, Todd, as a regular listener, I know how much you enjoy the NASA space program. Here's a chance to purchase your very own slightly used space shuttle. It only has 120 million miles on it. He says, GoDaddy and GoToMeeting might have to step up the advertising dollars so you can afford it. Of course, he highlights that with a grin. And it's a Craigslist listings for Shuttle Atlantis. John is pretty funny, and I'll have the link up to the show notes. And, you know, it's only estimated value of $1.7 billion. So, you know, it's just Trump change, right? I got an email from Chester. He said, hey, don't know how many people this is affecting, but for those of us doing a rebuild, well, bookmarks our passwords until this basically involves Mozilla Labs Weave, or Firefox Weave Sync is not working. He says, do not know how many people this is affecting, but for those doing a rebuild of bookmarks or passwords, you can't do that until they fix a problem. Just sent you a comment from a group discussion in a separate email. He says, we're doing an emergency. This is from Mozilla. He says, we are doing some emergency maintenance that will cause 503s, in other words, basically errors, client errors, off and off for anyone in the Phoenix, some number here. Please be patient. So in other words, thanks for sending that over, Chester. I'm sure this is a short-term thing, and probably by the time the show is published, it'll already be fixed. Mike, I know that there are F-22s here in Hawaii. Two of them have arrived. A big deal about it was on the news, of course. Everyone is excited about the two F-22s that are going to be here. Actually, there's more that are coming. There's a whole squadron of them. They're going to be out at Hickam. So, everyone's been pretty fascinated by the aircraft. I've seen them fly before, so was not surprised to see some of the aerobatics that they're able to do. Okay, I think that wraps me for the show. Wow, right on time. Hey, thanks, everybody, for hanging out. Kind of a rough show tonight, if you ask me. Seems like I was stumbling over myself 4 or 5 times here. Don't know what's up with that. But thanks for coming. Thanks for hanging out. Thanks for staying subscribed. geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline is 619-342 7365. We'll be back here with you Thursday night for the live recording. Of course, the show's released every Tuesday and Friday. Thanks for being with me. Everyone, take care. Have a great week. And aloha.